Hello and welcome to another episode of Betting People. It's very good to have you with us this week because we have a very topical guest. By the time you watch this, astonishingly, the US presidential election may not have been decided. It was one of the most bet on markets in history, and I'm sure a lot of you will have questions about the result, what it means for political betting going forward, and many other things, including, of course, polling methodology and the age-old battle of punters versus pollsters. Now, I have the perfect guest for that this week. It's Patrick English, who currently works at the University of Exeter. Patrick, tell us a bit more about yourself and what you do, and thanks for coming on.
Pleasure, Will. Yes, great to be on. Thanks for having me. I am a lecturer at the University of Exeter, and sort of in my, I guess spare time, I am also a political forecaster and sort of commentator, and I work on exit polls as well in the UK. So a lot of sort of polling data, a lot of analysis of how elections are going, both sort of in the moment on the night and leading up to it, and of course afterwards in the postmortems. Picked up a lot of US stuff this year, and God, what a year to really start doing that properly, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Out of interest, to start the conversation on a sort of topical note, just quickly, what did you have in terms of the electoral votes prediction beforehand?
Yeah, good place to start. So the model I specified was basically kicking out a modal forecast for the electoral college votes rather than a median or a mean. And that was saying that Joe Biden looked set to win 350 votes in the Electoral College in the sort of as the most common outcome of the simulation. The range was anywhere between kind of just under 370 all the way to 412. So the way we're looking at the minute is probably going to come in toward the sort of lower 50% quartile of what the forecast was saying, but very much sort of in the range of what was being predicted.
Okay, so a lot of people, especially punters who placed bet on the US election before polling day will see this as a big miss, right? Bigger than 2016, because things have been, some people say they've been tight, which is sort of where I land, because even if Biden wins it, and at the moment that is not confirmed at the time of recording, although he looks to be within range, it will have come down to razor thin margins in quite a few of the states. Other people will say actually that the mail-in votes has basically taken him well clear, and he'll win by a big margin the popular vote. And as such, you know, if you're a punter, say, and plenty will be thinking that you shouldn't ditch polls forever. I know those are two hypothetical positions, but where do you land as somebody who made a forecast in this? Because a lot of people will now be thinking wrong for the second time in a row.
Yeah, I think broadly, I'd be in sort of position two there, broadly speaking, although with a lot of caveats. Probably the first one would be, someone pointed out to me on Twitter recently that this, you might even say this is the third election in a row where the polls have kind of been out by a fair sort of chunk, because they sort of overshot in 2012 as well. So it's, yeah. It's one of those things, I think, where the polling, there is a polling error, I think, and I think it's probably about maybe 1.5 times the size of what we had in 2016, and in the same direction again. We're probably going to end up in a situation when, as more votes are counted, we've still got a lot to come from California, we've still got a lot of the states to declare that the swing states now, we're probably going to end up in a situation where Joe Biden has potentially over 300 electoral college votes. As you say, he's probably somewhere maybe around 5, possibly even 6 percentage votes points ahead in the national sort of picture. And he's picked up a lot of the swing states that the polling data was saying he was going to pick up. Georgia, if that does come through, would be like a really sort of good, I think, success story for the polling industry, because they said that was happening. Many people, the campaigns, everything were saying before, that doesn't really feel very likely. But the pollsters and the forecasting ones were saying, yeah, Biden has a really good shot here. But then just over the border in Florida, that race, according to the polls, looked sort of really good for Biden. And it turns out that Trump kind of carried Florida, not easily, but fairly well in the end. North Carolina as well doesn't look like it's going to end up being hugely close. So I think in the post-mortem, we're going to have to pick through state by state and maybe see what's going on there. Because it might turn out that sort of the errors aren't quite correlated as much as they might have been across the states. And we still, again, as we did in the last election, might get to a place where the polls aren't too far off in terms of predicting the national vote share and the national sort of leads.
Okay, that's very interesting. One thing actually I do want to get into is there's been a disconnect between what punters in various betting markets, whether it be with us here at Star Sports, whether it be on the exchanges with Betfair, whether it be with Predict It in the US, or even the spreads, have disagreed quite a lot on the chance of Joe Biden, Donald Trump. You know, Biden went off 4-11 shot. That's 73.53% or so. Even the most sceptical forecast, which is 538, had him going off a 90% chance. The college forecast, I believe, was it 94?
I actually ended up, higher than that. So college forecast, being my forecasting model, had him a 98% chance of winning.
Now, of course, it's worth saying, these are not sort of exact predicted forecasts. And if he wins, that will be the case. There are a number of projections, and there are different ranges. But would you have any idea as to, from your view, why there's such a difference in general between essentially bettors and the predictive forecasters? With the caveat, of course, that some of the predictive forecasters may be bettors themselves, as we've seen through the in-play over the last 72 hours.
Really good question. I think, I guess maybe the first thing to say is that if Joe Biden wins, then a 98% chance of him winning was right, and a 90% chance of him winning was right, and even a 75.5% chance of him winning was right. So I guess we're sort of talking about, like, how much uncertainty is there, sort of, is appropriate in these situations, or can we explain the difference in the amount of uncertainty that is in forecasting models versus betting markets, right? And what does uncertainty mean in that context, right? Because there's sort of an argument to say, well, you know, if you're, and just because something is very certain doesn't mean you don't think it will be close. You can imagine a situation where if the polling is consistently telling you that Biden is going to win Florida or something with like 51%, and sort of Trump is going to be on 49%, and the polls keep hammering in there, you're going to have quite a certain forecast that says Biden is going to win, but you're also simultaneously saying, well, it's going to be 51-49, so it could also be close. So uncertainty doesn't necessarily automatically mean, or a lack of uncertainty doesn't mean you think it's going to be a blowout, right? That's more when you look at the electoral college votes and you look at the sort of predicted vote shares in each state. I think why is there more of a disconnect? Why, and certainly this election was a huge disconnect, right, between what forecasters were saying and what the betting markets were saying. I think it's because the betting markets, I think, are able to and do perhaps price in a lot more different kinds of uncertainty that the forecasting models were able to do or chose to do. So, for example, I imagine when punters are going to betting markets, or people such as yourselves are building betting markets, you're potentially building in things like, okay, well, what if Trump declares martial law and stops a count or something like that? Or there's some kind of really bizarre last minute sort of news story that kicks in, or something happens where a court intervenes and stops a count for some reason. And that could maybe push one state into one direction or another. In the forecasting models, so someone like Nate Silver would say, well, yeah, you can kind of price that in just by throwing loads of uncertainty into the data. That's quite an unnatural way to do it, right? That's kind of getting then away from what is the data telling you empirically, and more into a sort of, can I maybe hedge against what the data are saying about who is ahead in the polls in all of these states, and consider some maybe external factors that I think may or may not happen. So in that case, I think a forecaster could get more toward a betting market. But then the more you do that, the more you're kind of you're moving away from what the data are sort of telling you in terms of the raw numbers that are coming from the states, and you're sort of gaming it out a little bit more and pulling in potential other theories and ideas, which I guess is what's happening when punters go to betting markets and betting markets are constructed, right?
No, absolutely. And I think it's well worth saying, Biden, part of the reason Biden probably went off so short was a lot of people realizing late in the day that there was this giant edge between what the forecasters were saying and what the markets were saying, that allowed you to get, in sort of real statistical probability terms, 4-11 about, you know, a shot that some, you might have said, was tens on or something, in a two-horse race, essentially, with no hurdles or ball in play instance or natural sort of occurrences like that, to sort of interrupt the outcome. But, I mean, that's a debate that will rumble on and on. And that was a really interesting answer and something I think people should reflect on. Coming towards the end of part one, which I appreciate has had a US election focus, but just quickly, are there any trends that punters should be looking ahead to for any of the upcoming races? Because we have the potential for two Senate runoffs, which could decide control of that chamber. We have the midterms, which will come up in 18 months or so. And of course, we have the 2024 election, where we've already had a market up, which will probably be out after the election. Is there any sort of trend lines that people watching this should be looking for?
Yeah, I think the potential for the Democrats to take the Senate within the next 2 years is an interesting sort of timeframe to be thinking about, because obviously you mentioned there the runoff. Looks like we're going to have two runoffs in a state, which it looks like Biden is just about to flip. And if sort of Stacey Abrams gets back in there and works her magic again, we might find that Georgia might return to Democratic senators, in which case they would take control of the Senate. But failing that, the range of states which looks to be up in, well, which is up in the next midterm elections is quite potentially favorable toward the Democrats. So they kind of have a maybe a twice shot in the next 2 years of taking Senate and sort of getting that three-way control of the US political system. Now, one of the interesting things, if it doesn't happen with the Georgia runoffs, which is, you know, it's possible, but it's quite a big ask, that I'd be looking ahead to that sort of midterm market, is thinking about how is the sort of presidency going? And is this a situation where there's going to be a massive financial crash coming in? Or does the coronavirus sort of crisis keep going and going and going? What are Biden's approval ratings going to do? Because that, I think, will give you a good indication toward how that Senate sort of is going to look after the midterms. Is it going to be a classic midterm election, as we see all over the sort of democratized world, where the incumbents get absolutely hammered just because they're the incumbents and the opposition party sort of comes through and picks up a lot of seats? Or will it be kind of seen as a sort of another referendum on Biden? Will it be cast as another Biden v. Trump? What is Trump doing? Is he still around? Is he sort of still trying to push the Republican Party? Is he still commenting? Is he still there? All of these things, I think, will be really interesting to keep an eye on. But if you're a punter, I'd kind of be thinking, okay, what odds can I get on this sort of the Senate being Democratic sort of either now or in the midterms? 2024, who knows? I think that depends a lot on who runs and a lot on what the Republicans do in the next sort of week or next couple of weeks regarding Donald Trump. Do they keep sticking by him, or sort of, I guess, if not sticking by him, refusing to get out in front of him and say, look, we disown this guy now. He's lost the election. He's going really hard on American democracy and against American citizens, and we don't like that. Get rid. Or does he have that much of a control over the party and its apparatus that, you know, they keep him around?
Absolutely. A number of fascinating questions there. Thank you very much for your time, Patrick English. And we'll be back with part two of this Betting People. Hello and welcome back to Betting People with Patrick English. Now, in part one, we discussed a lot about what's been going on in the US presidential election. There'll be more about that in general and how it might be able to help inform your punting choices down the line. But first things first, I did ask you a bit about sort of what you did, but I'd like to know, how do you get into becoming a political forecaster?
Yeah, great question. So I picked up, I guess, political forecasting in and around the 2015 general election in the UK. So I was in the middle of my PhD then, and my supervisor, Professor Rob Ford, sort of got, and Professor Maria Sobolevska as well, sort of got me into the exit poll team here for the UK general elections. And sort of from then, I just was fascinated with the sort of the science and the art and the sort of, I guess, the emotional parts of election forecasting, sophology, and trying to anticipate, trying to guess, trying to get a best handle on how countries are going to vote and what that means for them, what that means for the future, what that means for other countries. You know, it's huge. It's so important. And if it's something you can kind of get ahead of and sort of have a bit of fun trying to unpick what's going to happen, yeah, it just kind of gets me up in the morning, you know.
I'll say. And now we're talking about it on that sort of subject. How do you make a forecast like the one that you had for the presidential election? You know, what goes into it? A lot of people would assume a bunch of polls chucked together, but how does that become a prediction? You know, how is it that you end up with a model which will presumably predict 350 electoral votes, and sort of 52% of the popular vote, as an example?
Yeah. So the first thing to say, I guess, is that there's sort of not a general consensus on how you do this. There's not even a completely agreed consensus that you just can look at polls. There's some forecasts which look purely on economic data or socioeconomic data. And there's one forecast that even looks at like the keys to the election in the US, which is quite fascinating. Don't think it did so well this time around, but there we go. But by and large, most forecasters, particularly ones that are kind of updating every day and sort of in informing the commentary, will be mostly focused around bringing in all polling data and averaging them in some way. Now, increasingly, that averaging process is a modeled average process. So we don't just kind of take the mean of all polls and see what the Biden percentage is at the national level and at the state level. It's like, okay, can we use statistical methods called regressions to basically account for factors like, okay, does this particular polling company tend to sort of have Trump very high or Biden very high or not? Or what kind of sample are they using? Is it likely voters or is it registered voters? And what influence might that have on what the poll is reporting? So then we can kind of take all that information in and sort of blend it together and model out all these sort of little statistical to's and fro's about who exactly the pollster is and what their sample looks like, and come to some kind of centralized estimate on where the candidates stand. And you can repeat that process at both the national level and the state levels, right? So you can take in all the state polling and make an informed sort of specific state forecast, which is something that I was doing for my forecast. I actually took individual polls in the states and I modeled all of the swing states individually. So I treated them like their own individual elections and then sort of correlated the outcomes across the matrix of all the possible sort of vote share probabilities in the states, but I didn't sort of model them all in together. Other forecasters did model them all in together and sort of looked for correlations across states. Other forecasters, until election day, were still using some economic data as well and some sort of general incumbency effects too, to see what kind of that might influence in terms of, well, if a state is doing particularly well economically, might they be more inclined to vote for the incumbent? So there's all kinds of stuff you can put in. For my forecast, I was modeling the polls and the polling data was the only thing that went in there. It's very, very similar to the 2019 general election forecast that I did with Jack Bailey from the University of Manchester. So I've got to give a heck of a lot of credit for him for designing the model and sort of writing a lot of the code.
Okay, absolutely. That's fascinating. Now, a lot of pollsters will have, and a lot of forecasters will have changed basically their methods from 2016, trying to weigh more for education, trying to do more in terms of state polling, trying to add an incumbency to anticipate maybe a better performance by Trump, et cetera, et cetera. Now, just quickly, at the moment, it looks like there's been a bigger error than there has been in 2016. Why? I mean, obviously, it will come out maybe in the wash, but would there be any reason as to why that happened, given that pollsters were aware and trying to do things to change it, especially in the States, individually?
Yeah, really good question. I think so, yeah, as at the time of recording, it looks like the error might be between sort of a 2016 and a 1.5 times 2016 level, right? It could narrow. We'll have to see how many votes come in Biden's favor in places like Pennsylvania and Arizona and Nevada and California as well. Is going to be really slow to count, as it always is. So we could get back to approaching like a just a kind of 2016 style error. Why has that happened? I guess the sort of the easiest response would be to say, well, the pollsters were obviously wrong when they said that they'd learned from 2016, right? It could just be the same thing again. And some initial evidence I'm seeing does seem to maybe suggest that the education weighting thing again just didn't work. There's also a really interesting suggestion that I've seen that says there might be a ethnicity or a race in an education interaction effect that might have been completely missed by the pollsters, which should be really, really, really interesting. And certainly, I don't know how much we should read into them because we're not so sure about the samples, but some of the exit polling stuff that suggests that Donald Trump might have been doing better with ethnic minorities in the US in this election than he did in 2016, that would be really, really interesting. And if that is being combined with a potential sort of miss on education, that might get us a long way to explaining why the polls were still, again, unable to pick up the amount of momentum and support for Donald Trump. Interestingly, I think they've not done too badly on Biden, right? I think they're probably going to come in at about the modeled average for Biden. It's kind of the Trump share that has seems to have been sort of, again, underestimated as it was in 2016. And initial evidence, yeah, might point back towards this. What do your samples look like? And is your education weighting good enough, with the addition that we might have a sort of race ethnicity effect in there as well, that the weighting and the sampling just wasn't capturing properly?
Thank you very much. Very comprehensive explanation there. lots of people watching will be asking, going forward, why should I trust polls again? And can I not actually make money by just directly opposing them? And some people would argue that if you've done that over the last few big political events, the last few years, you'd be up. Is that an approach that, A, you think you'll see more people taking in betting, and B, would you advise for or against it?
So I think if you had done that, say if you had betted against what the polls were saying in the US election this year, and you bet against what the polls were saying in the 2019 general election, you would be down, because the polls were saying that Joe Biden would win the election, and it looks like he's going to win. And the polls were saying that the Conservatives were going to win the 2019 general election, and they did win. So I think we get a lot of sort of focus and a lot of very blown up sort of focus on where and when polls are sort of not doing very well, and we don't really recognize sometimes that actually in the bigger picture they're still pretty all right, you know, they're still not too bad. Looks like that the modeled average of the national sort of lead for Biden is going to be it's not going to be too far away from where he actually gets to. In a lot of states, in the vast majority of states, the polling has been right in terms of predicting the winner. It's just in a couple we seem to be a bit far off, and they seem to have been systematically underestimating the potential Trump vote share. But the kind of the story from the polling of this election was, Biden has a good lead, a really good lead, so much so that he could survive a polling error and still pull out a pretty decent win. That is pretty much exactly what has happened. So I probably would advise against just systematically betting against polls. Yeah, and I don't think that's a particularly good assessment of where the polling has been at and where the polling industry is right now. I think it's pretty good. There's room for improvement, 100%. And I also sort of don't agree with some takes that say, well, you know, so long as the actual result comes in within a sort of plus or minus 3% margin of error of whatever the average of the polls were saying, I don't quite agree with that, because that's not what the statistical theory, which underpins sampling and statistical uncertainty, says should happen. But, you know, by and large, I think the polls are doing a pretty good job and they continue to basically give us the right story.
For what it's worth, I would absolutely agree with that. One last question. So we're at this sort of point here now where it would appear as if state polling being off has perhaps caused much of the error which we're seeing in terms of the narrative of the race, right? In the sense that Biden looks as if he might get there, but it would have been a closer shave than all the forecasts predict, even if it was within there. Percentages. Two questions. Number one, do you think we have a 2016 again in the sense that a lot of pundits basically interpreted the headline numbers from the forecasts and suddenly became overconfident or far too confident about Biden winning in exactly that fashion? And number two, what moves can companies who already made quite big changes to what they saw in 2016? What more moves can they do to really try and breed out this error, especially at a state level?
Mm. Yeah, so I saw some really good stuff from Elliot Morris over The Economist last night about thinking about how forecasters and sort of polling might better communicate the range of uncertainty and the range of estimates that are possible given where the polling is at and where the forecasting model is at, right? Because I completely sympathize with the view that if you looked at, say, my forecast, for instance, which says 98% chance of Biden winning, in your head, you think, right, it's going to be a Biden blowout, which is not at all necessarily what that 98% means. It simply means that Biden is really, really, really likely to win. It doesn't necessarily tell you much about the range of outcomes or the sort of the size of that win. It just tells you about the win. So I think a sort of... Elliot was saying, well, why don't we sort of think about when we report our forecasting, when we report our polling, why don't we talk a bit more about the range of possibilities? So, okay, 30% of the simulations in the forecast or sort of 30% of the range of which this polling data covers would be a small Biden win. 30% would be a massive Biden win. And sort of, I don't know, 30% might be Trump scrapes it, something like that. That might give a much more sort of rounded and better communicated sense of what we mean when we talk about uncertainty and what we mean when we talk about who is likely to win and what winning actually means. Winning is a whole range of estimates from 270 votes to 450, right? It's a big range. And I think we perhaps should do a better job at communicating what that range is, what it looks like, and what our forecast models sort of give to the various components of those ranges of probabilities. And then, the second question, remind me what that was again.
So the second question was basically, what can pollsters do to try and react or sort of improve this margin of error again? Because they made changes from 2016 to 2020. What would they make from 2020 to 2024?
Yeah, so I definitely agree that the state polling has certainly not improved, I don't think, although it's sort of early days and I haven't really crunched the numbers on it. Hasn't improved and probably, as we were saying at the top of the show, has more than likely got a little bit worse. So there has to be a sort of inquiry there, either formal or informal, into what is going on and why can the state polling not quite pick up what it needs to. Is it to do with sample sizes? There's a lot of polls at the state level which go from like 750 voters, right? Some of them even have 400. And they spend a lot of time sort of modeling different turnout scenarios and then splitting sort of the samples across different kind of subgroups. And I wonder, you know, could we sort of think about, or could the polling industry in the US think about working with much higher sample sizes, maybe minimums of 1500, 2000, but then you get run into a lot of costs, right? Really high costs.
Yeah.
A lot of difficulties there. Some of them have really long sample periods. That's an interesting thing. That comes out of the US state polling data. Sometimes you can have sample periods which run from sort of 3 days before a weekend and then 2 days after a weekend. And then that sample is kind of taken together and the voting intention estimate taken from that. I wonder if there's something there they might be thinking about, okay, can we get more of a snapshot? Because 5 days, you know, things can change in 5 days. And I think the weighting and the sampling, it always comes up every time, but evidently, whatever fixes were applied between 2016 and now doesn't look like they've managed to bridge that education phenomena, or it might be that there's an ethnicity interaction which came in. When we do sort of really get into the post-mortem of this, it might just be that this was a really sort of unusual election. That could also be a possibility. And the kind of normal methods of dealing with statistical uncertainty, measurement error, and sort of margins of error just kind of got really completely skewed by one particular thing. And an instance of this might be the impact of the voting of Latino and Latina voters in Florida, which looked to be a super interesting story. And so a subgroup within that sort of Cuban Americans, there is evidence to suggest that they might have heavily gone and backed in for Trump, which is something that kind of was not anticipated. And given the sample sizes that state polling works with, probably couldn't be anticipated. So was it just something like that? Was it just one kind of dynamic which has pushed away the state polling from where it needed to be, which may or may not replicate again in the future?
Really, really detailed and I think very helpful answer on which to end this very special betting people. Patrick English, thank you so much for giving your time in the, I can't believe I'm saying this, literal thick of the election results.
I know, there are some good memes about election day again, and just keep going on and on and on and on. I sometimes wish maybe we could have something similar in the UK, and then I kind of think, do you know what? Nah, I'm quite happy that ours is usually done and dusted by 6 a.m.
See, I'm actually of the opposing belief on this. I know the exit poll is a magnificent, magnificent feat. I've had some insight into how it's calculated, and it's absolutely brilliant. But I also would really love an election where we just count the votes and we wait to have a winner declared. I really would love it.
Well, we have a secret exit poll. We don't tell you until all the results have come in, and then, yeah. It's just, well, just for our own purposes. But yeah, we got that one right as well, yeah.
All right, thank you very much for your time, Patrick English. You can find him by going to, what's your Twitter handle, Patrick?
At @PME_politics.
There you go, and I'm sure there might be more forecasts down the line. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for watching this episode of Betting People.
Johnny Ward presents The Front Runner in association with starsports.bet. 18 and over. Be gamble aware.